Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are bringing to you a blast from the past. In honor of our episode today with Shea Serrano, we decided to go back to 2015 when, despite being on hiatus, we were so excited about the Rap Yearbook that we recorded an entire podcast about it.
We went through and recorded our thoughts on every single song starting in 19...
I believe we did 1990.
Starting in 1990 on, we were talking about bringing the Pelton Cast back and decided to record this podcast, or we just really like hearing ourselves talk.
That's the key.
And we thought that us talking on this, we knew at some point that we'd use it and thought that there was no better time than this.
So enjoy these dated references to 2015.
Keep in mind this is 2015. Yeah. Opinions may have changed.
We're really way too overhyped about the idea of there being an Amazon bookstore at U-Village. I've never been there.
All complaints should be made out to past Kevin and Tristan.
True.
Current Kevin and Tristan stand by no opinions except for opinions about Nicki Minaj's verse on the song Monster.
I stand by literally everything I said about pretty much everything there. Yeah, it was all great.
Hotline Bling is still your number one song in 2015.
It's still my number one song, period. On that note, enjoy the episode.
Thanks.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington.
Oh! We're back in Boulevard Park and better than ever.
The original home of the Pelton Cast.
Wait, and I think we might be worse than ever.
Yeah, we'll see. It's up to the listeners to decide that. We have a special thing to discuss here today.
So you told me about this thing that is, I would say, taking the internet by storm, right? It's got the internet going nuts.
That's a fair description.
And that is The Rap Yearbook by Shea Serrano.
So Shea Serrano was formerly a writer for Grantland until Friday when Grantland closed.
Oh, he was with Grantland until the end.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. But I just honestly, I thought he was no longer with Grantland.
I'm going to pour a little out for Grantland here, though. Anyway... So he came out with this book and a few months ago started encouraging people to pre-order it on Amazon. And I was one of the people that did that. And that turned out to be a great decision because Amazon ran out of copies.
Wow.
Twice, I think, actually.
Wow.
Like they have to go print more because somehow Shea Serrano got so many people to buy his book.
Of a paper book in the year 2015?
It's hard to believe. So here's the thing is Shea Serrano is my close personal friend. And do you want to know why he's my close personal friend?
Why is that?
Because one time he tweeted, I don't know who Kevin Pelton is, but I definitely think he knows what he's talking about.
Wow, when was that?
I wrote something about the 50 best postseasons in NBA history, and Tim Duncan came out high.
Were you working at ESPN at the time?
Yes, it was my first year at ESPN.
Now does he know who you are?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. I haven't specifically talked with him about it.
Okay. So he's not your close personal friend?
He's not. I made that up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He doesn't know who you are?
He might vaguely know.
Interesting. So this book has taken the world by storm, right?
Like I said, Amazon ran out, Barnes & Noble ran out, some other book website called Books A Million ran out.
Wow, Books A Million? No more copies at Books A Million?
I know. The as-yet-unopened Amazon bookstore ran out.
Wow. Is there actually going to be an Amazon bookstore?
Oh, yeah, you're way behind on this. They're opening one in U-Village.
With books in it?
With books in it.
They're not just going to sell Kindles with books preloaded?
It's a physical location.
That's really strange.
It is. I'm very curious to check it out.
Amazon, I'm impressed. So what I wanted to do, right? There's a forward by Ice-T because there's always a forward by Ice-T.
There is not always a forward by Ice-T.
And we can't really recreate this on the podcast, but I feel like part of the appeal of this book is not just its modern sensibility in judging and analyzing rap music over the last 26 years.
Going back farther than that.
36
back all the
years.
Way, yeah.
But also the drawings in the book are what makes it.
Absolutely.
Right?
Those are not by Shea Serrano.
No.
Those are by a guy named Arturo Torres.
And it's a very similar aesthetic as like Free Darko would have had. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like things like this that appeal to people about our age and generally discuss basketball and hip hop are very successful.
Yep.
But so what I wanted to do was ignore the first 11 years of rap music or so, 12 years, and start with 1991 and go through year by year and discuss briefly. Do you feel like this is too much?
I feel like that's too much.
We can talk about some quickly, okay?
All right.
Discuss, and you have some recollections and some insights from the book. I have not read the book myself. I'm mostly just familiar with the songs, right?
Yes.
Starting with 1991 and Mind Playing Tricks on Me by the Ghetto Boys. The reason that I wanted to start here was because of the line, "This year Halloween fell on a weekend, me and Ghetto Boys are trick-or-treating." And I was waiting all Halloween day to get a great picture of the two babies that I have, trick-or-treating or something, so I could Instagram a photo of them with that as the caption.
That's why you need to be dispensing parodied advice on Twitter.
It never happened.
How did it not happen?
Well, we didn't go trick-or-treating.
Oh, well,
me and Ghetto Boys didn't go trick-or-treating.
You should have had them pretend to trick-or-treat at your house.
I know. I worked very hard. Well, first off, Mrs. Fantasy Genius posted a photo of them on the internet earlier in the day, and I try not to, bum rush the internet with – I don't want to bum rush the internet with photos of babies because sometimes it can be too much.
Okay.
Right? And then also the lack of trick-or-treating. But I was listening to Ghetto Boys last week.
As
right?
you will.
I was listening to the song Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster and just appreciating how great Ghetto Boys are. And then when
were
I was
appreciating the movie Office Space,
I was watching the video on YouTube, and then next comes on Mind Playing Tricks on Me, and it was the week before Halloween, and I was like, oh man, that's such a perfect line, particularly because Halloween fell on a weekend.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's 1991.
All right.
1992, Nothing But a G Thang.
I think I would say for us that our appreciation of rap music really starts around the G-Funk era.
Yes.
And Dr. Dre's solo, The Chronic.
Of the important movements in rap over the last 30 years now, G-Funk, I think, is probably the most important movement, right? At that point, rap music still sounds modern. When you listen to G-Funk, it doesn't sound dated even to this day.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with that. It's the modern era. It's like 1980 in the NBA is the modern era of basketball.
Well, after Michael Jordan, I feel like, for the NBA. It was like, or even Jordan's peak. When that happens, it's like everything changes. Dr. Dre is like Michael Jordan.
I can buy that, which it would have been more funny if he was like Dr. J.
Even on this book, it's like, okay, so they start in 1979, but on the cover of the book, the first song they show is 1989.
Yes.
It's just like those first 10 years, there's a lot of great rap music, but it all feels very dated at this point, right?
And it's also not targeted to their demographic as well.
1993, Cash Rules Everything Around Me.
Cream.
Get the money. Dollar bills, y'all.
I don't know if I have any particular thoughts to offer.
This is the artist who the company I work for books the most in this book.
That is true.
I'm currently making money from.
Yep.
And that is the Wu-Tang Clan. It's amazing. It's not amazing that they're in here, but in the year 1993, which I think is generally considered to be the greatest year in rap history. They needed to include the Wu-Tang Clan at some point, right? Because they're one of the most important rap groups of all time.
Yes.
And right there, Cash Rules Everything Around Me. It's pretty amazing.
It is. It's probably not what I would have gone with in 1993. It's definitely not what we were listening to the most in 1993.
What were we listening to, G-Funk?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they got Nothing But a G Thang right there in 1992. You have to balance it out.
I think Warren G's album was 94, right? That would be too late.
It's like if I would have written this 2003 on, every single year would have been a Kanye West song.
Which wouldn't have been the worst choice.
1994, Juicy by the Notorious.
B.I.J.?
Generally considered, and I think that I, at the very least, would agree with this, greatest rap song of all time.
I can't argue with that.
Okay, it's the undisputed greatest rap song of all time. Have you read the chapter about Juicy yet?
I have.
Were there any particular insights about it?
Not any more than any of the other chapters, I wouldn't say.
It's a song where, again, in 1994, I don't remember listening to it. I don't think it was like a big radio single or anything at the time.
I don't know. I mean, I can't. That one doesn't speak to a specific time to me as much as G-Funk does.
Okay, so you remember the moment when Juicy really became a big deal?
When Biggie died?
Or no.
What are you talking about?
It was the year 2004 or so, and the Girl Talk album, Night Ripper. Do you remember this? I felt like it catapulted it to another level. So that album, do you remember the girl on that Girl Talk album? It was like a cultural moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a moment.
And a lot of songs were just very small snippets, right?
Yeah.
That whole, the whole first verse on Juicy paired with Tiny Dancer by Elton John, which first off, I have to go back and listen to that Girl Talk album.
Yeah, that I'm getting nostalgic for that now.
But that moment was like, the whole album was great, right? And it was something where it kind of like took the previous 20 years, the previous like 40 years in rock music, the previous 20 years in rap music, right? And the last like 10 years of like indie rock, and pared it down to one album, like the greatest moments of that. And then you took that as like the centerpiece of the whole album, basically. And it was like, this is the song. So I heard it there. Like, I knew the song, but it never really stood out to me. And then I heard it there, and I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest rap verse of all time.
Yeah. I would say, by the way, the thing that, not that I needed to go back, but the thing that got me back into Biggie after the fact would be the Notorious XX album.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Which is what got me into the XX as well. So
there you go. It's very beneficial.
Which was introduced to by Sue Bird.
That's very strange. True story. You just had to throw a name drop in there. Good friends of Shea Serrano. 300 retweets. Sue Bird. Okay. 1995. Dear Mama by Tupac. Which to me is the strangest inclusion of any of the songs.
Because of the fact that you just don't think it's that high on the Tupac canon?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a fine song. The other thing is that you go to 1996, and California Love, Tupac and Dr. Dre. 2 years in a row of Tupac? I understand he's one of the most important rappers of all time, but like...
I think it's understandable to have him 2 years in a row. I was surprised that that one was on here, because in my head, it seems like more of a novelty song.
Dear Mama?
No, California Love.
California Love?
I mean, I love it, but it doesn't seem... I don't know.
California Love... I think probably still holds up for the younger generations. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't polled them. But...
Talk to your children.
I'm sure that they love California Love. Luca does like Tupac. It's always weird. But it's a song that everybody knows all the words to it, right?
That's true. The song, by the way, that everyone knows all the words to that is glaring, I would say, in its omission from this.
Which is what?
Regulate.
Mmm. See, I think that came out in 1994, right?
Yeah, which therefore dooms it.
Anything. So that's the thing. If you put out a rap song in 1992, 1993, or 1994.
Well, like, I don't think that Warren G was probably sitting there thinking about this book coming out like, 2 decades after the fact.
When Shea Serrano writes this book, he's like, I should have waited until 1995 to put out a beat up.
After Nate Dogg has passed, RIP.
Okay, so you remember... my best friend growing up was a person named Michael Roddy.
Yep.
Right? And he had an older brother who I would say was knowledgeable about hip-hop, John Roddy.
I mean, he was our guide into the world of hip-hop.
I would say that's true. He was a big Ken Griffey Jr. fan. He was a fan of all things that were cool for people around 1995, right?
Yes.
And he had heard the song California Love before we had.
Interesting.
Do you remember this?
No.
We were at the, because we spent a lot of time at their house in the mid-90s.
We did.
And he turned on Cube 93 and was like...
And it took 30 seconds and they played California Love, well, because it was on every 5 minutes at that point.
He was like, you guys have to hear this song. It's amazing. And he turned on Cube 93 because this... I think he probably eventually had the All Eyes on Me CD, but this maybe was before it came out. There was the single that came out before the CD. Maybe he didn't have it yet. And it came on, and we lost our bananas. Do you remember this?
I have no recollection of this. I can imagine it, though.
We were, like, running around the room. We were so excited about California Love coming on.
Were we more excited about this or when Griffey hit his eighth home run in his eighth consecutive
game? It was,
game?
Like, right around the same time. We were in the other room. We were in a different room.
Okay.
Do you remember that? They had the two different living rooms.
Yes.
And we were in the other living room when Griffey Jr. hit his eighth home run, and we were in the, like, down below one with the weight set. When California Love came on, I remember, I think I jumped on a couch. It was just like, our lives are different now. We're in a post-California Love world. We heard this song one time. It'll change our lives. We'll be talking about it literally 20 years later.
Is it possible for any song to have that effect for us now?
Not even close. That's kind of what I was thinking of when looking at these songs. It's like, yeah, I remember like the first time I heard that song, and I was like, oh, that's weird. 1997. Can't Nobody Hold Me Down by Puff Daddy.
I associate that specific era of Diddy and Mace with a very specific memory of listening to those songs in the upstairs of our grandparents' house while playing, I believe, triple play baseball on their computer.
We played a lot of baseball on their computer.
Yeah.
And you felt like listening to Puff Daddy during that time period?
Yeah.
This is an interesting one because I would say that this was one of my least favorite, like, Puff Daddy singles. I mean, to me, Mo' Money, Mo' Problems, right? That was the jam and had Biggie on it. I'm surprised that one, maybe that came out in 1998.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's weird to think how popular Puff Daddy was, right?
It's not weird to me to think how popular Puff Daddy was because he's still, like, very famous.
He's famous.
But, like, how successful he was as a rapper.
Yes.
Is hard to... I think almost entirely on the strength of his production values.
And taking songs from the 80s.
Yes.
He raps, 10 years from now, we'll still be on top, right?
I think we've got over this before.
Which at the time seemed so reasonable, right?
Did it? It's not like anyone from 1988 was still on top in 1998.
It was a different era. It was in the post-G-Funk era.
I suppose. I mean, I guess Dre would be the answer.
There are many people. Look how long Jay-Z. The first time Jay-Z pops up is the year 2000, and he's still probably an equally successful, maybe not exactly musical artist at this point, but his, like, we're talking Hard Knock Life was, like, his first big radio single, and that was, like, what, 1997, 1998?
Yeah, I guess this is true. Most people did have staying power. Many people did have staying power.
1998, Rough Riders Anthem by DMX.
This made me think of liking to name stuff Rough Riders throughout the my latter years in high school, including our Knowledge Bowl team.
Including two Canadian football teams.
Yes.
You named both of them the Rough Riders.
By the way, shout out Keith Price. We got a lot of analysis of him starting for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders on
CFL Today. Yep. He's going to stop, drop.
Shut it down, open up, stop.
1999, My Name Is by Eminem. And this is another, like when you look at this, you're like, okay, Rough Riders Anthem. Like, it was a popular song. My Name Is was, like, such an important cultural song, right? Everything changed when that song came out.
It made me think also about retroactively how weird it is that, you know, once it seemed like Eminem was clearly the voice of our generation. And now he seems like... So, I don't even know how to describe it, but
it's a weird thing because, like, when you
almost embarrassing.
Eminem's music still holds up, though.
Yes, but the whole, like, ethos of it.
Yes, Eminem's a strange person to think about because, like, he still has many fans and he still has popular radio singles, but, like, he's somebody who he's almost like the band Weezer or something, right? There's still, like, somehow a popular band, not as popular as Eminem is, but people generally agree that they haven't been good since, like, 1996.
But in Weezer's case, I think it's, you know, that they haven't been as good. It's not that Eminem isn't as good anymore. It's that what he was doing is no longer socially acceptable in 2015
yes.
in the same way as it was in 2000.
It's very interesting.
Our society has evolved.
He's tried to adjust, I think, in some ways. You know, like, Eminem is not, like, a vulgar rapper at this point, right? Mm-hmm. His, like, new songs, like that Monster song, right? Which I'll like because he mentions Russell Wilson. Any rap song that mentions Russell Wilson, I will like that song. That's all you have to do. But, like, it's not a vulgar song. It's kind of just bland, right?
I suppose.
Because the thing that made Eminem interesting was both his technical ability, which he's still, like, a pretty proficient technical rapper, right?
And just the raw power of his emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that it's difficult to do for a long period of time, but also you're a little bit shocked by everything that he was doing.
That's definitely true.
The other song that has held up, it's really interesting. You look at Spotify, and they have the top tracks. The number one track by Eminem is, oh, my God, what is the name of the song? With Timbaland that they used to play before Husky games.
Oh, One Shot, Till I Collapse.
Yeah, Till I Collapse by Eminem. So, like, that song being the number one song is shocking at this point, right?
Yeah, when you look through his catalog. That. The Real Slim Shady is a distant seventh.
Yeah, The Real Slim Shady, which, like, is such an important song. My Name Is. There's so many hits through this time period. And Till I Collapse has managed to be the number one song over time. That's why I kind of think it's interesting to look at this book and, like, what they're doing is they're choosing songs that both have, like, cultural impact at the moment and staying power, right?
My Name Is not even in the top 10 here.
That's crazy.
Or this isn't, yeah.
I mean, it's not necessarily reflective of like how popular the song was at the time, but when I see that, Until I Collapse is like clearly the best Eminem song.
Yeah.
He also talks about how he'll quit rapping if he's not as good. And you're like, yeah, about that, Mr. Eminem. 2000, Big Pimpin' by Jay-Z.
This is an era when I really did not like Jay-Z.
Me either. I remember hating the song when it came out.
Wait, I feel like I argued with you about this era of Jay-Z.
Maybe retroactively.
Possibly, because I definitely have used felt
some
like
of the similar arguments that Jay-Z uses on the Black Album.
Oh, I'm certain you did. Because I definitely felt like he sold out, which is weird because of the fact that I hadn't listened to the like the original Blueprint. It was
or Reasonable Doubt.
That was only based on the same volume two art.
Probably his worst album of his early career.
I thought that was the real Jay.
Okay, Jay-Z's another complicated case, right? Because we were completely oblivious to probably his best work. Right? That we first had heard of him because of Hard Knock Life, right?
Yes.
Before then, he'd already put out two albums.
One of the first rap CDs that I recall you owning.
Yes. Along with Phenomenon by LL Cool J.
And
Big Willie Style.
Yeah.
But we're using the term rap loosely here. But so we were completely oblivious to Reasonable Doubt, which is still considered like probably top three Jay-Z albums, right? It's like an undisputed classic album.
Yes.
And then Volume 1.
Yes.
So the Hard Knock Life Volume 2 album, when you listen to it now, is pretty terrible. Like top to bottom, it's almost unlistenable. Has not held up. Reasonable Doubt has, but it has. And you're skeptical about this, but you should try to listen to it because it's bad.
Nostalgia is hard to overcome here.
Jay-Z like stopped being good at rapping for a little while. And that's the thing about Jay-Z is he goes back and forth between being really good at rapping and really bad. Right? It still happens to this day.
Wait, when was the last time he was good at rapping?
Watch the Throne? It's not that long ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
But around the Big Pimpin' era, Jay-Z started becoming much more famous, right? He started being the Jay-Z who we know now, who's like not a businessman, a businessman, right?
That is true.
But I had completely written him off because I think at this point I started being interested in real rap music, or maybe I stopped listening to rap entirely.
There was the one summer where I remember listening to a lot of The End.
Yeah, that was a bad summer. So it wasn't until the Black Album. So neither of us were really interested in the Blueprint, right?
Don't think so.
And it wasn't until the Black Album came out, and you got it when Tower Records was closing. Do you remember this?
No.
Tower Records was closing, and you got the CD of the Black Album.
That's interesting, because all I remember is listening to the Gray Album.
And the Gray Album, which hugely important for both Jay-Z and Danger Mouse.
I don't know why people don't understand that the best thing that can ever happen to your career is to get remixed by someone.
Jay-Z did understand it, though.
Yeah, he did.
He put out the a cappella version of the Black Album.
Obviously, but
his label? They mean the label that he's the owner of?
Who prevented that then? I guess it was on the Beatles side. Yeah, it's on the Beatles side. Yeah.
He put out an a cappella version of his album so that people could remix it. Jay-Z got it.
Yeah.
Like, the Beatles are not traditionally great business people. Jay-Z is a better businessman than the Beatles. Bigger than Jesus.
I don't know. Doesn't Paul McCartney still own the rights to all of Michael Jackson's songs? I think he's making a lot of money off
his catalog. It was the other way around. Michael Jackson owned the rights to Paul McCartney's songs.
Oh, well, there we go.
Which are much more, they're pretty lucrative.
Yeah, they are. That's true.
Anyway, so it was an interesting time period. But now looking back, Big Pimpin' is great. And there are many songs from that era that are great.
I don't know if I would go so far as to say great, but.
And also the inclusion of UGK in that. Okay, 2001, Falling Up. I love how long this conversation is. I don't even care. I just want to talk about it. Okay, 2001. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. We talked about it.
we've been talking about this.
Which is the takeover from the Blueprint, the diss track by Jay-Z against Nas, and Ether, the Nas diss track against Jay-Z.
And a weird thing is, I don't think I'd ever listened to the song Ether until I read this and decided to go seek it out. And I got to be honest with you, it still doesn't do that much for me.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned yesterday that like being ethered has become a term now.
Oh, yeah. It's totally a thing.
Which is amazing because from at least my perspective, Jay-Z, he not only won the like battle between him and Nas at the time. Long term, it's not even close. It's just like these two people were competing with each other.
I mean, Ether may be like a more effective diss track, but in terms of something that is actually pleasant to listen to, the production qualities on The Takeover, produced by Kanye,
yes,
make it much more entertaining to listen to.
The greatest rap line, the greatest diss line of all time is not saying anything, right?
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
I want to find the exact line so that I don't do it injustice.
Oh, I looked this up yesterday.
Because, I don't know, it's not Puppy, I'm a Genius. When you know what? When, you know who?
Did you know what?
What is the next line after that? You know who? Did you know what? Is the best line though, right?
Yes.
Because he doesn't say anything. It's just like, hold on a second. I'm not even going to say this because it would be too harsh to say it.
Although he did apparently later say it.
It doesn't matter. Songs. All that matters is what exists on the song, right?
Because you know who did you know what with you know who. Exactly. But let's keep that between me and you for now.
That's great, right?
Yeah.
That's it. It's just like,
I like the math breakdown of 4 albums in 10 years. That's whatever. Let's say 2. 2 of them was due. 1 was nah. The other was Illmatic. The other was Illmatic. That's a 1 hot album every 10-year average.
His math seems kind of complicated.
It is. But the 1 hot album every 10-year average is strong.
But and it's true also. And now we're going on 1 hot album every 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. 2002. I feel like this is a difference, right? Between these songs up until here were generally like radio singles, right? And this was a pretty big song, but Grindin' by Clips.
Which I told you earlier that I wasn't sure I've ever heard.
Wow, admitting it publicly. Yeah. You didn't go through the same Clips phase that I did. You don't have a Fuck Jive t-shirt.
That is all very true.
I'm sorry to the fans, but them crackers weren't playing fair at Jive.
And, you still wear that t-shirt?
I wore it 2 days ago.
Dude.
Not even joking. Babies aren't old enough to read Fuck Jive. I'm still wearing it.
It's going to be a sad day when they are old enough.
It was a little bit left of center. They were working with Pharrell, yeah. Right? Clips. And have I would say continued to be strong in the rap world, Pusha T in general, right? Clips as a group are not that important. But put out an album, the album after the album that Grindin' was on, Hell Hath No Fury, like probably one of the 10 greatest rap albums of all time.
Wow.
And took the genre of coke rap, right? Which the Wu-Tang Clan started around 1993, particularly Raekwon the Chef, and perfected it to another level. Well, it was like so many people.
His ability to cook.
He's Raekwon the Chef.
Master Chef.
Okay, I know that people in Virginia do this to signify Virginia. I'm holding up 2 fingers up one way and 2 fingers down the other way. That's VA right there.
Yeah.
Because of Clips. That is literally the only thing that I know about the entire state of Virginia, but I know this because of the rap group Clips.
You don't even know that it's for lovers?
Oh, yeah, I've heard that also. VA, 2 up, 2 down. 2003, a song which going back to dominating the airwaves, Into Club by 50 Cent.
Yeah, one of the things that Shay talks about in this book is basically it's the last great commercial rap song / album.
Yes. It was huge.
No, it was the 8th highest selling rap album of all time. And really? Nothing that's come after it has sold.
Oh,
as
really?
Much.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which makes sense because of the general shift in the market and the dynamics of music.
I was going to say, I think it's the last thing on here until my 2015 choice. Because we're going to make a 2015 choice at the end of this 45-minute discussion of rap music from the 90s. It's the last thing on here that Dr. Dre had his hands in.
Huh. That sounds right.
It's kind of...
Wait, that's not true, is it?
None of these things.
I mean, Control, you could say.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll say Control. But it's the last thing for a very long period of time that Dr. Dre had his hands in. And it kind of like led into a period of his dormancy where he had like still... was the person who was kind of behind the scenes for this major rap artist, right? And 50 Cent is still famous because of this album and this song to this day.
And also because of Vitamin Water.
Oh, yeah. It's great. We're all drinking. What's it? Healing water?
What's it called? Recovery water.
Recovery water. Okay, get 2004.
Get Russell shout-outs correct.
Still Tipping by Mike Jones. Did you know this song? Do you know the line? I got the internet going nuts.
I don't think I did know that line.
Okay, you said Shea Serrano is from Houston.
Yes.
Right? So he had to include the song because it's the most important song from Houston of all time.
Yep. I do remember yelling a lot of Mike Jones.
Mike Jones. It's the most important thing.
Bobby Jones.
From Houston since Phi Slamma Jamma.
Oh.
You like that?
You're going with that over Hakeem.
Since Robert Horry. This is like nowhere near the level of these other songs, though, as far as popularity goes. No. This is like a song for the internet. Yep. You know? And that's why Paul Wall raps, "I got the internet going nuts."
No.
But he had to. If you're from Houston and didn't include this, it'd be a problem.
You couldn't go out. You couldn't leave your house.
2005, Gold Digger by Kanye West featuring Jamie Foxx as Ray Charles.
It was interesting to me that this was the Kanye song that ended up on here.
It's the first one. There's another one. But
I don't feel like it's that high on my list of early Kanye songs.
Totally agree. It's not in my top 50 of Kanye songs.
I put it in my top 50.
Well, you're not as selective about Kanye songs as I am. I'm really shocked.
I'd love to actually hear your 48th best Kanye song.
We're going
to
do it.
Oh, no.
Right after
why
this.
Why did I suggest this?
That'd be the best podcast. Top 50 Kanye songs. I'm going to tweet it later.
That's
one at a time. 50 tweets.
You can really tell a difference between my number 47 and my 48 here.
I have very specific feelings. Okay. Hustlin' by Rick Ross. And you were saying that's 2006.
Yeah.
You were saying that Shea Serrano has more of an appreciation for Southern rap than you do.
That's true. First off, almost anyone has more of an appreciation for Southern rap than I do. It's fair
to
say.
You hate Southern rap. We'll get there when we talk about Young Thug, because I have a lot of complicated feelings about Young Thug.
Do you?
Yeah. I think this is a fine song. Rick Ross has never been that interesting of a rapper to me. It seems like somebody who's like, and I actually read, I think it was a Pitchfork review about this, where they're talking, are you watching a Houston game?
No.
Oh.
Watching Warriors Clippers.
People talk about, there was a Pitchfork review where somebody was like, you don't understand Rick Ross unless you're driving around like a Maybach, whatever, I don't know anything about cars, in Miami, right? You have to be like cruising in Miami listening to Rick Ross as loud as possible, and then you'll get it.
Hmm.
And it's like, he's kind of just the worst rapper on Monster, which we'll get to later. 2007, one of the most important songs to me of all time. International Players Anthem, UGK, featuring Outkast. How did this get in the book?
I mean, Che's that good.
What? When I saw that, I was like, okay. It's like, all right.
Respect.
I see what you did there. Right? International Players Anthem, I don't know if it's even aged that well.
Yeah, it has.
But it's so important to this time period. We walked down the aisle at my wedding to this song.
Well, walked out.
We walked out.
Yeah, but it's the greatest love song of all time.
Right. It's like, this is like my song with so many different people. It's like,
it should mostly just be your song with Mrs. Fantasy Genius, I feel like.
It's like my song with every human being who's ever heard it. I distinctly remember I was driving. It was my senior year of college, and I was driving in the U District, and it came on, and I think I started gasping. I was just like, oh, what just happened? International Players Anthem? What is this? It's the greatest song of all time.
But it was 2007, so you had no idea what the actual song was, right? Unless you happened to hear it.
Yeah, I had no idea what it was called. There was no Shazam. I couldn't play it on Spotify.
It wasn't like now it's on my car. It says, you know, what's playing.
Well, it doesn't say that on mine. We don't all have fancy cars like you do.
Yeah.
Okay, 2008, A Millie. We're almost finally done. I'm sorry, world. A Millie by Wheezy F. Baby. Just got his property seized.
Yeah.
Lil Wayne.
Fortunately, he made a muff off of A Millie to have property to get seized to pay off his debts.
This was a weird one, right? Because Lil Wayne put out this song at the tail end of a year of like 3 years of putting out nothing but great music.
Just hit after hit.
A Millie kind of came. So he had all these mixtape songs, right? And The Drought Part 2, which is like generally considered to be one of the greatest mixtapes of all time. Wheezy was on like such a different level. Now he's kind of a joke, I feel like, at this point. People, I think, forget a little bit how he was like one of the most interesting, like, as far as bending words, rappers of all time. Lil Wayne, MF Doom, Cameron, right? Three greatest rappers at just like saying random shit and making it sound good. Like just understanding how language can sound good, you know? It was a really interesting thing at the time, and now he doesn't really do that anymore. And I even feel like Amelia was at the tail end of it. I was never really that into it. 2009, Best I Ever Had by Drake.
Ah, the first Drake bursts on the scene. My first memory of listening to Best I Ever Had is in a Fred Meyer parking lot.
Okay.
So, there you go.
Again, it's not really my favorite Drake song.
No.
Like, I mean, it's like a good song.
I mean, it's maybe the most important because of the fact that it kind of launched him into a new stratosphere.
Right now, I'm just like all about running through the six with my woes, right? I know, on that Hotline Bling.
Let's wait a little bit.
Oh, okay. We got to get through these. Okay, let's get to Seattle in a second here. When we talk about Sir Mix-a-Lot. 2010, which I can't believe was 5 years ago. The song still feels so present. Monster by Kanye West featuring Jay-Z, Rick Ross, and who this song really... They shouldn't have the picture of Kanye right there. This is a Nicki Minaj song.
That's fair. It does not feel that current to me. I've got to be honest with you.
This song, Kanye's great. Rap's great on it. Jay-Z's great on it. Rick Ross is fine. It's a Nicki Minaj song. This is like what her career is based off of. Probably her best performance and just like unleashing the like back and forth that she's able to do with herself and probably the best that she's ever done at it. Like this song holds up.
Okay.
2011, In Paris by Jay-Z and Kanye West. The third time Kanye is on here.
Yes.
Which I think that's probably the most of anybody.
It is.
Which makes sense because he's the greatest musical artist of all time.
I don't know if I'm not going to second that. Well, we can hash that out in the 50 Best Kanye Songs podcast.
We can talk about it 8 times in a row.
And that is obviously the defining memory of this is going to the Watch the Thrones tour. And I just wanted them to keep playing it all night. I thought it was so hilarious.
Like if they would have, it got better every time.
Oh, exactly.
Right? Like Kanye personally, sorry, Jay-Z, I'm giving Kanye all the credit for this one. Kanye was like, we have this song that nobody realizes how great it is. We are going to play it until they realize. We all did.
Do you actually think people didn't realize that before?
I don't think. It was not like a huge song before that.
It was a pretty big song.
It was after they played it over and over and over again. It's in this book because Kanye performed it over and over and over again.
I mean, I haven't gotten that far to that chapter, so I don't know if that was the reason.
When he said again, you're just like, yes, let's do that. Oh, I wish I could go back in time to that show.
See, you know what was great about it is all of life, I feel like one of the most difficult things for people of our age is like not living exclusively in the past, in the future. It's so difficult to live in the present. This got very, very philosophical at some point here.
I love it.
But when you were listening to that song, you couldn't be thinking about the last time you heard it or the next time you might hear it. You were just in that moment of hearing that song.
It's all true.
It's the only time in my life I've ever been in the flow.
You know, okay, so we went to the show. Previously had seen Jay-Z a few times. Previously had seen Kanye a few times. I remember going to it. We had to drive to Tacoma on like a rainy Friday night, I think in December.
Yeah, it was right before Christmas.
It was not like, I was not excited about going to the show. And then you get there and you're like, oh my God, I'm watching Jay-Z and Kanye West. And then at the end of this, I know that they're going to play in Paris like 8 times in a row.
I was pretty excited about it because I was busy finishing up the pro basketball prospectus that we had put out in like a month that year.
Because the lockout.
Yeah, so I had been working nonstop on this and it's like finally I'm going to go do something fun and it was that.
I wish I could go back in time to that show, watch it twice in a row and be drunker the whole time. Would have been even better.
You didn't have enough of a contact high at the Tacoma Dome?
Because
it was a pretty significant one.
It's just like every time that I really just can't talk about Kanye enough. Every time that I see Kanye, even when it's unexpected, like at the festival that I was at this last summer, the day before I find out that I'm seeing Kanye, it's just like, do I really care? And then Kanye comes on and I'm like, oh yeah, I care the most. This is the best moment of my life. In that moment, you're not thinking about any other moment. All you're thinking about is how great it is.
Hey, when do you think that Frank Ocean album is coming out?
I was thinking about that the other day. Okay, 2012, somehow, some way, Macklemore and Same Love. Look, let me just say, if this book is written 20 years from now, the song is not in here. But
maybe it is, though. Maybe it's an important cultural turning point.
It's not. But in this drawing, he appears to be drinking a Slurpee, which is not from the Same Love video. It's from the Thrift Shop video.
Well, obviously, his attire in that is from the Thrift Shop video. So, yes. Yeah.
But this is a strange one to be included to me, particularly that song, which was it's an important song because of the message, but was never that huge of a hit, right?
No.
Can't Hold Us is still a bigger song. Thrift Shop was a bigger song to begin with. Same Love was kind of sandwiched in between them.
Yeah, I mean, it clearly only made it because of the message, which is understandable. I mean,
have you read the chapter about this yet?
Yes. That was one of the ones I read first.
What does Shea Serrano have to say about it?
That, you know, it was important for a rapper to come out and take an inclusive stand, given the genre's history of homophobia, among other phobias.
Okay. Honestly, it's very cool that Macklemore is in the book.
It's so cool.
Right?
It's crazy. Someone who you're on a first name basis with is in the book.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, Mackle. someone who I'm on a first name basis with. Like one band that billions books and one person who I was on is 100% guest listed Sasquatch.
Yeah.
But it's cool that he's in there. And I'm a little bit surprised that he's in there.
I'm very surprised about it.
Right. And I'm curious to see.
I would have been even more surprised before that album came out if someone had told you, hey, Macklemore's going to be is the song of the year and this book celebrating the last 35 years of rap. Never would have imagined.
Very strange. 2013. Control, but really.
Just the Kendrick Lamar verse.
The Kendrick Lamar verse, which didn't even appear on the official Control song.
I've said this before that I find Kendrick Lamar's verse on Control to be wildly overrated.
What?
I think we may have talked about this on the podcast.
I like that it's called Control. Like they're doing their due credit to Big Sean, right? Big Sean and Jay Electronica, which like I didn't even know Jay Electronica was on the song. Nobody knows what Big Sean is talking about. You just like listen to the version that has Kendrick Lamar and just his verse, right?
Can I make my argument for why it's overrated?
I'm sure that you have every right to be wrong on this podcast. Some of us do it all the time.
Anyone can like go and rap and say how great they are. Anyone can do that. But only Kendrick Lamar can do it and have it hold up. And it's not because of the verse on Control and because of the fact that that verse was so amazing. It's because of his whole other oeuvre, his whole collected works. That's what matters, not that one verse.
Okay. But he's saying it on this song. I don't think you understand.
People were just excited because they wanted there to be rap beef. That's all it was.
It's not even rap beef. It's that he was like bringing the realness to so many people, right? It wasn't just like one person. It was like, hey, I just want you all to know I'm the best, right?
But he's only the best because of everything he's accomplished to that point. That one verse is irrelevant to him being the best.
You're just so wrong about this. Why? I don't even understand what your point is, that he's so good that this verse isn't good enough.
The point is that the verse itself is not that important. It's like if someone has a great play in the All-Star game. The point is not that they had a great play in the All-Star game. The point is that they were good enough to get to the All-Star game.
No, you're totally wrong. It's like, I'm trying to think of what the exact year was. Because I'm trying to think of one great individual performance, right? And to me, it was like 2008. LeBron James against, I think, the Detroit Pistons, carrying them in the fourth quarter and overtime.
2007 Eastern Conference Finals.
To the NBA Finals, right? And it's so amazing that you can see one person not just be the best. Because LeBron James is the best all season, right? But in that very moment, he told everybody that he was the best, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't the best all season that year, and that's part of the point.
He told Jermaine Cole, Big Crit, Walleye, Pusha T, Meek Mill, ASAP Rocky, Drake, both Meek Mill and Drake, by the way.
Yeah.
Drake, Big Sean, Jay Electron, who's on the song! Tyler, the Creator, and Mac Miller. He was like, all of you, by name. It would have been like, after the game, I don't like you coming at me with sorry receivers. Right?
But again, it only makes sense because he made the tip.
This is the tip right here.
No, this is the post-game interview.
Okay, that's even better because the post-game interview was even better than the tip. It's a combination of the two.
This is a classic chicken or the egg dilemma.
You're crazy. Okay, let's say that the album that Kendrick Lamar put out before this, right? That's the tip. And Control is the post-game interview that caps the whole thing off. I'm not saying that one can exist without the other, but this is what makes it perfect.
But the tip can exist without the post-game interview. The post-game interview cannot exist without the tip. That's my argument.
Wow. Okay. You're crazy.
Didn't expect that we were going to get this heated out in control, did you?
I'm just shocked. Okay, and also, like, you have to think, this song was the song of 2013, which is a credit to it being the internet era, where, like, it being on the official song really is irrelevant.
Yes.
You know? But this song was the song of 2013 while not even being on the official version of the song. That's pretty amazing, right?
It is. I mean, obviously, in terms of cultural moments, like, I remember sitting on Twitter and hearing people talk about Control that night.
It was just like, whoa, what just happened? Kendrick Lamar
broke the internet.
Didn't just call people out. He didn't say, you know who did you know what. He said, by name. He's like, usually we're friends, but we're not friends right now.
You really brought it back full circle here, didn't you?
2014, Lifestyle. By Young Thug and Rich Homie Quan. Just like, I understand. The internet loves Young Thug. It's something that I've never understood. I like just do not get Young Thug. I like realize that I'm getting older. But like, I remember watching one specific video of Young Thug. Like, it was like a, from like back in the day Atlanta video. And it's just him and all of his friends like walking around with all of their guns. And I was like, I feel really uncomfortable about this. Like, I understand that like violent imagery is part of hip hop. But, like, in the climate that we're living in, where, like, gun violence is very important to our culture, it's, like, one of the biggest issues happening in America, like, praising as, like, hipster white people, somebody who's, like, all about gun violence, it feels very strange to me. Like, the idea that we've really embraced as, like hipster rap fans, Young Thug, is very strange.
So you're saying you have an issue with gunplay?
Yeah. I haven't heard a lot about gunplay lately. Chief Keef, I'm totally fine with. Okay, so your song of 2015, and I think we all know what you're going to say if you're paying close attention.
Hotline Bling, song of the year. It really has taken over the internet. And I think it's got staying power, too. I don't think it's a novelty.
I don't know. First off, can you consider it a rap song?
that's a debate all its own.
I have complicated feelings about Hotline Bling, too. I'm not going to get into them, though.
Do you? Like, why are you not going to get into them here?
Well, I feel like when you really think about what Drake is saying on
The actual lyrics to the song?
Yes.
Yeah, no, don't.
It's like
you
offensive.
Absolutely should have conflicted feelings
right?
about that.
He's like upset. He says that he's jealous, which I think is like kind of nice that he's willing to like go out and say that. But it's like he's saying he owns this woman's body,
it's
right?
It's very possessive, yes.
I don't like anything about it. But it sure is a catchy song.
the dancing. Oh, the dancing.
The dancing is great. It's a good song. I worry that your opinion is a little bit too of the moment. This was 3 months ago, or let's say August. You would have said, I can't feel my face, right?
Yeah, probably.
It was the song at the time that it captivated the world. And now Hotline Bling is that song, right?
But we talked during the summer about how there wasn't a song in the summer. And as we've talked about offline, we've been talking about this.
We've been talking about this a lot.
There was no real song of the summer, but Hotline Bling has somehow become
the hot
song of the fall.
I can't feel my face was the song of the summer.
No.
Look, what?
It was a song of the
summer. It was the song of the summer. Are you joking?
No, I am not.
It's the undisputed song of the summer.
I mean, it's definitely among the babies, the undisputed song of the summer.
It was among every human being in the entire world.
It's a great song. Don't get me wrong.
I could not. Okay.
But there was nothing as ubiquitous as Hotline Bling is right now.
It was as ubiquitous as Hotline Bling is. Yes, it was. I was driving around LA when I was there in August, riding around in Ubers all the time. Every single time I got in the car, no matter what station they were listening to in LA, I Can't Feel My Face was on.
All right, that's a valid
argument.
It was
playing on every single station in Los Angeles, even the mariachi stations.
All right, that's a valid argument.
My God.
The mariachi version of Can't Feel My Face is really good. You should check that out.
My number one song, number one hip-hop song, not number one, what I think is the most important hip-hop song, going back to the Kendrick Lamar well.
Yeah.
Right? King Kunta by Kendrick Lamar. So Control
is
not...
For some reason, that song does not do it for me at all.
Really?
Yep.
I got a bone to pick.
You should.
Kendrick Lamar puts out basically a victory lap album, right? And How to Pimp a Butterfly. To Pimp a Butterfly?
I think it was How to.
It was a How to manual.
Yeah.
a Victory Lap album where it was almost like he was willing to do anything, right? It was a rap album. It was a jazz album. It was a soul album. It was freeform spoken word. And in the middle of that album, he gets together with Thundercat and puts out the greatest song that he's ever recorded. It's not Control. He doesn't need to say that he's the greatest because he's so far beyond that now, right? Kendrick Lamar is the undisputed greatest rapper at the time.
So you're saying that the greatest diss is not having to say anything at all?
He already did that. Look, Richard Sherman didn't have to say anything to Des Bryant this weekend, did he?
No, he didn't. We'll get to that.
He didn't say a word to Des Bryant. He probably, after the game, shook his hand and said, great game, right? Because he's already done that. Everybody already knows. Control already happened. Kendrick Lamar is on the victory lap now. He doesn't have to be on the attack. Look, who's he competing with here? Jermaine Cole? Meek Mill? Wale?
Miller? By the way, I don't know how much... This doesn't really appear in the book that much. Shea Serrano hates J. Cole.
And
it's like one of his most defining personality traits.
Look, me and him have something in common. You like J. Cole?
I do.
He feels like he's trying way too hard. We should pull this out and do this as a separate podcast.
I like people who are trying way too hard because that's how I am in my life at all times.
Trying too hard?
Yep.
I don't think that's true. Eh. Look, you came up with that Kawhi Leonard tweet just so naturally. You didn't even know it would get through internet
tweets. It's like a duck. On the surface, it looks calm. Below, paddling furiously. You've never heard that expression?
That's just so strange. That's your comparison for your tweet?
What?
Like, your Kawhi Leonard tweet?
I'm constantly working. I'm workshopping my tweets. You know, trying to perfect them, crafting in the lab, really, working on tweets.
So anyway, thanks for listening to our...
our discussion of the Rap Yearbook. And go check it out. All right. Thanks for listening to this special edition of the Peltoncast.
This special, unexpected edition of the Peltoncast.